Hi, welcome to Greek Tragedy. It's psychology without the science, so it's philosophy. I was about to say it's philosophy without the science, and I was like, wait, that's not actually a thing. Today I'm joined with
Hannah Rose Poltrek.
Yeah, I love how she sings it too. It makes my ears glisten in abyss. That was probably the most metaphorical thing I've ever seen, I've ever said on this podcast. You know, lately I've been seeing that people actually edit their podcasts really religiously.
Yeah.
And it's like,
it's a thing people do.
But here's the thing, that doesn't really feel like a conversation, because I feel like a conversation in human nature incorporates stumbles. Yeah. And mistakes and mispronunciation like I just did. So I don't know, it feels like it's super, I don't want to say artificial, but more so curated. So I kind of like the ongoing shebang bang of the talk.
Shebang bang of the bang bang.
Shebang bang of the bang bang. Yeah, there we go. Intellect, am I right?
Anyway,
so today we're covering one of my favorite philosophers. It's such a notable woman that people don't really talk about. Her name is Simone de Beauvoir. And, you know, I kind of give her credit for early progressive feminism theory, since she was starting to talk about topics that didn't even have a right to be talked about back in her day. And I honestly, personally think she is the woman who single-handedly raised the question of gender, if gender is even a social construct, or, you know, she made that statement that gender is a social construct. So it's super cool that a woman in the 1940s, 1950s, 1960s did that, such a progressive woman, because even now, we don't have that talk, and now it's seen as, super progressive. So you can just imagine, in the 1940s, if she's, putting out that statement, super, super ahead of her time. But yeah, do you know anything about Simone de Beauvoir?
I actually don't. We've talked about, you've, name-dropped her once or twice.
Mm-hmm.
Here now and then, but,
Yeah. No, I talked about her, I think, in, the postmodernist episode, yeah. Because she is, a feminist postmodernist. And that's why what makes me, kind of support postmodernism, too, is that there's, a feminist aspect to it, too. But I guess the first thing to know is that she doesn't really see herself as a philosopher, rather a feminist theorist and a writer. But she had a lot of contribution to notable writings, and one that speaks fondly to me is The Second Sex, and I would say the one that I know probably the most about. She was a progressive political activist, and a lot of her work lies on the lines of existentialism philosophy. But what is existentialism, and what is existential philosophy?
Good question, Ava.
Well, to answer your question that nobody prompted me to answer... it explores human nature, the feelings, experience, and overall existence we endure. Even meaning, Viktor Frankl. And a big thing about existentialism is authenticity. So we can kind of see where Simone de Beauvoir is going with this, the existence of women and feminine morale versus male morale, and the differences and the prejudice against women.
Interesting.
Yeah, no, kind of interesting about her. She grew up in a very wealthy family and was a devoted Catholic for a bit of time, but as time grew, her aspirations in the church and that of to become a nun tarnished as she became a teenage atheist, and she was very
Ooh.
Very atheistic
angst.
She was Catholicism not for me, I'm atheist. And I think I read somewhere that her parents were kind of angry at that, because religion was such a big part of France as a country, the French culture, and to kind of turn against that again when that was a very much a social construct back in that day is super ballsy of her. So you can see that she's had this bold overturn against society implements
mm-hmm.
On people. At first in college, she was a math major and then turned to studying philosophy. And then she was a teacher. And this is the coolest part is... she didn't marry this guy, but she had this open relationship partnership with a fellow philosopher named Jean-Paul Sartre, which if you're into philosophy, you definitely know who that is. He's very progressive, very, very much on the left.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think it's cool that she had an open relationship, again, like, in the 1940s and 50s when, again, like, none of this was really talked about, and it kind of just shows that a lot of the time we dismiss, like, these people because, like, now we're like, oh my god, everything's so progressive. But even have, like, an open relationship, I feel like you'd be shunned for that.
Yeah.
Everywhere.
For sure.
So this woman, like, was doing so much, like, against, like, societal norms and what society wanted to implement in that time, which I think was super cool because, again, like, nobody really talked about it then, and nobody's, I mean, there's conversation, but there's not really any progression going on with that conversation. But with her open relationship, of course, because society did not like that, she got a lot of hate for it and a lot of backlash, and a lot of the time people cared more about her relationship than her writings, which we can kind of, like, compare to, like, you know, celebrities now, because a lot of the time you'll see Tyler, the Creator, or notable musicians, they don't want to say who they're with because they want people to focus on their art and their work more so than who they're dating or who they're affiliated with. Mm-hmm. And that's fair because you don't want to be known for who you're dating. You want to be known for, like, your personal work. And maybe you're part of a family group channel that is your relationship, which is also very questionable, if you know what I'm talking about. Like, those, like, family channels with, like, five kids. And I just feel so bad for the kids because it, like, low-key sounds like exploitation of the kids.
Oh, for sure.
While they're, like, filming, like, hey, guys, like, today, the day in the life, we're going to school, and now we're making lunch. Oh, and here are the kids again. And, like, they're filming the kids, and it's, like, the kids don't have the consciousness to realize, like, what they're being adhered to. And I feel horrible for them because it's kind of, like, labor in a sense because you're making them work.
Yeah.
That's another topic. Family YouTube channels. I'm like reality literally videos. Talking about the LeBrant family right now. I don't know if you probably don't know who that is, but they're, like, this, like, very, like, devout Christian. There's nothing wrong with being a Christian at all, but it's just, like, they were filming their daughter when she was, like, straight out of the womb, and it's, like, I don't think your daughter for sure doesn't have the consciousness to, like, depict what's going on or anything. Like, why are you, like, putting her into that thing? But yeah, she found that when people cared more about her relationship, that it was super, super insulting since they had no business of it. That's what she said. And secondly, that's discrediting her work as a philosopher or as a writer, as she likes to put it. And also, ooh, super cool, she was bisexual.
Interesting.
And there's a lot of, like, I wouldn't say rumors, but there's a lot of
lore.
Yeah, lore into that. But also she had, like, a lot of relationships with, like, younger girls too. So a lot of people are, like, questioning that and stuff. But then you have to remember that the age of consent in France was, like, 15 at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But also, why, as a teacher, would you do that to the younger girls? So there's a lot of, like, questionability to that and ponder over Simone de Beauvoir. But I think, like, don't you think it's, like, super cool that this, like, progressive woman in the 1940s is outright saying gender is a social construct, she's bisexual, she's in an open relationship, and she's going against everything that society is telling her, like, religion.
And she's an atheist.
Yeah, like, exactly, she's an atheist. Like, what do you think of that?
Honestly, I think it's so interesting that she, like, wanted to be herself regardless of all of these constructs that she was, like, literally calling out society for doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so she seems like a really cool human just to, like, have a conversation with. And I know for a fact that she would fit in really well with society right now.
Yeah, I feel like she'd be, like, on the headlines, like, fighting for change too. Yeah. Because what's super cool is that we forget about how delayed progress is, like, back in the 1940s.
Yeah.
And to just think that in the 1940s, with everything that was going on in America, segregation, all that, like, awful things, and obviously, like, colonialism, imperialism all over the world, and she's, like, fighting against societal norms at the same time, because that was seen as normal, like, imperialism and all this stuff, but she was, like, no. Yeah. And I'm not saying she's, like, a civil rights activist in a sense, but I'm saying she's kind of she's a feminist and fighting for the right to, like, be who you are in freedom in that sense, which also is another topic that I kind of want to get into. It's, like, people talk about, like, freedom all the time, but they don't talk about it in the terms of, like, gender, sexuality, openness to relationship, and, like, freedom of thought and freedom of thinking or speech. So
yeah, I mean, even in the 40s, World War II is just beginning.
Yeah, exactly.
And so I know that, I don't know if we're gonna talk about it later, but like feminism ended up starting a new, I guess, a new wave of feminism as the men went out to war, which is really common, is they took up jobs and mm-hmm. they kind of just like they reconstructed those social norms. And so I feel like she's just riding this wave and kind of enjoying the way that change is happening.
And it's super cool because I kind of feel like she's the current spiraling it all. Because, like, yeah. you kind of have, like, a wave and you have, like, the current. And she's not, like, I feel like she doesn't get a lot of credit, like, in general. Because who, let's be real here, nobody really knows who Simone de Beauvoir is. I mean, like, you can talk to people our age. But she is such
yeah.
a progressive icon for the reason of, like, she's starting this, like, you know what? It's okay to be bisexual. Because the thought mm-hmm. of bisexual... the thought of being bisexual in that time was super, like, against that, super punishable. And she's just sort of saying, hey, I don't care. This is who I am. Like, screw yeah. all of you. It's just crazy to me because she's, like, fighting for what we now see as progressiveness.
Exactly.
Back in the 1940s. So, now getting to the point of this podcast, which is a book called The Second Sex, or Le Deuxième Sexe en Français.
No.
Hannah's taking French, so I thought I'd include that. So I think the first piece that I want to kind of decipher is a prominent one de Beauvoir mentions. One is not born, but becomes a woman.
Hell yeah.
What do you think of that?
Like, hell yeah.
Hell yeah, exactly.
I mean, I know that in lots of cultures, there's a transition period between being a child and being a woman, so...
In bat mitzvahs.
A bat mitzvah.
Yeah.
I know a quinceañera. There are lots of, I mean, I don't know anything other than that, but I'm sure in lots of cultures around the world, there are, that's that transition period. And so
mm-hmm.
they say that once you become a woman, you're the same person, just a more developed individual.
And you have like, you have capabilities.
Yeah. And so you get to have a say in society. You get to... hopefully run a household, you know, bear children, and, you know, become, you know, either a businesswoman or a doctor, or, like, once you transform yourself from a child to an adult, you get to become who you want to become. You're not necessarily under your parents' household. Mm-hmm.
See, and that's, like, the scientific aspect of it, right? Because there's, like, the scientific aspect of, like, you know, going through puberty and, like, taking on, like, their responsibility and, like, the mm-hmm. psychological component, if I will. This is why I have a psychologist on this podcast.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, ma'am. But here's the thing that I wanted to kind of, like, address, too, is with this phrase, she was kind of the first to put into perspective of how gender is a social construct mm-hmm. and address the sociology that goes along with it, that sociologists and philosophers put into perspective now. She addressed sex gender distinction and the disparities between biological sex and the social / historical structure of gender and the associated stereotypes it obtains. This leads to Beauvoir's biggest argument of how the oppression woman faces is rooted in femininity and the social norms that they have been demanded to attend to. Mm-hmm. So I think with this phrase, she's more so saying they're not born any different. We're just born all the same, but it's the atmosphere around us that conducts us to become a woman in the sense that society wants us to become.
Mm-hmm.
And the postmodernist aspect of it is, like, who's telling us to become a woman? Like, who's telling us these are the societal norms that we should be following? Like, oh, you need to, this is a stereotypical one, but, like, society in the 1950s would be like, oh, you need to just be a housewife. And, like, yeah. that's your only goal. So she's kind of really just putting this, she was probably, like, the first one to put this into perspective and be like, this is just society being like, your limit is in the box and therefore we cannot help you. Mm-hmm. So I think it's super cool to see this progressive take on, this like gender and social construct that she's talking about like way earlier before her time, which I think makes her an amazing, outstanding philosopher. But as I was saying is Beauvoir's biggest argument is how the oppression of women face or how the oppression women face is rooted in the femininity and the social norms they have been demanded to
yeah.
attend. Do you agree with this statement?
Whoa.
Yes or no? Okay.
I think to a certain extent it's been changing, though. Because it definitely used to be, you have to be in the home and obviously take care of kids. But now, as women, we are juggling those different aspects. Because now, you see women who run companies and mm-hmm. who can, you know, be who they want to be if they put their mind to it.
Yeah.
But also, they're juggling kids. Mm-hmm. Additionally, men are starting to stay home.
Yeah.
And so, I actually, in middle school, I had a teacher who said that he was quitting his job to be a stay-at-home dad. And I'd never heard of that mm-hmm. because it's not very common. Not but I think now, in the 21st century, it's happening a lot more.
Yeah, and we can kind of, like, also, like, look back to, I mean, I don't have a dad, but we can kind of, like, that's another issue, but, wow. I mean, hey, Jerry, if you're, like, listening to this, Jerry's, like, my mom's boyfriend now. Hey. You probably won't hear this. But what I was gonna say is the fact of, my mom's, like, an independent woman, and she, like, always was the one working, and she's a doctor, and your mom's a lawyer, so, like, you kind of see that, like, oh, these women have had the power to, like, kind of go and seek education. But I'm sure when they were growing up, because my mom always tells me that, is that her mom, my grandma, didn't want her to do something in the medical field because she thought it was, first of all, scary, and second of all, like, that wasn't really a common thing for women to do in the Soviet Union. Like, they would mostly just work at the optical for eye lenses and stuff like that, like, not take on really big challenges, like, performing surgeries on human bodies.
Exactly, because it was seen as something scary because it had never been done before.
Yeah, and then they always position the man as being the dominant one and having the capability. So she's kind of just really just breaking down the fact of, like, society is giving you these norms to follow, but why is society doing this? They have ulterior motives. Not only that, but who puts them in charge of putting in these norms? And I think that all relates back to the fact that that's how they can easily control society, because they don't want anybody doing something out of their comfort zone. Right. Society goes one. So when women do have the chance to get in power, they really take advantage of it because they've been deprived of it for so long. And I feel like society was just eliminating that factor because they didn't want to see what women could do with the world and hopefully change it. Because if you look at history, it's pretty much the same thing. Elitists control the common folk. And they want it to stay like that so they can control the people around and the common folk. And that's, like, an easy way to, again, sorry for the third time I'm saying this, to gain control. So it's kind of funny how it's, like, all kind of intertwines with, like, the elitism, the feminism, Simone de Beauvoir, and how gender is a social construct, in my opinion. But I think it's crazy that Simone de Beauvoir had such a bold say in the norms that bring you up. For example, and I've seen this kind of shift, but, like, when you were growing up, there were, like, gender toys, right? There were, like, toys for guys, Hot Wheels, I think, for guys, and then,
like,
Barbies for girls. And now it's kind of like they're kind of dismantling that barrier, and they're kind of following Simone de Beauvoir's guidelines of, hey, one doesn't, like, really is not born a woman, but it becomes one with the things that surround them. So it's also this, like, nature versus nurture argument that you've probably heard of in psychology. It's like the things that surround you shape you to be who you are in the later days of your life or in the later years of your life. So it's, I think it's, like, amazing that this progressive woman was talking about this a while ago. Later in this book, she even goes in depth about how the reason her book is called The Second Sex is because it relates to how women are always second and compared to on the basis of men.
Interesting.
And I feel like that was such a big thing for so long, especially till now, because it's like women are always seen kind of, I don't want to say at the bottom of the pile, but kind of at the bottom of the pile. And it's always like the men who are on top of the pile and, like, kind of navigating the world, and the woman follows. But now you're kind of seeing the shift of women are creating the path and they're letting women follow.
Yeah.
Right?
For sure.
And we can see, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think women are taking that step up.
Mm-hmm.
And so while men, I'm like, if I'm imagining it like stairs, men have just been walking. And so women, I think, have had to kind of jog really quickly.
Yeah.
To kind of get up those stairs to meet the man. And now they're kind of, the women are slowing down, but they're in line with the man.
It's funny that you say slowing down, because I feel like that's a big thing that we should also talk about, is the fact that, like, people have seen this, like, change into, like, the second wave feminism. Now, like, there's, like, this third wave of feminism. And it's interesting because I feel like people are taking for granted the fact that they've kind of almost reached the fact that they're near men, in a sense.
Yeah.
And they're just, like, taking their time on this, like, lovely staircase. Mm-hmm. When in reality, this shouldn't be, like, a temporary thing. Like, we should constantly be fighting for our rights and constantly inclining the ladder, because you can never climb the ladder too far, since we've been punished so many centuries by the circumstances around us, the societal norms societies want for a controlled society and men. So it's kind of crazy to see how we're at this ladder, but we've kind of slowed down rather than inclined at a higher speed.
Right. I mean, I think, like you just said, we're still going to be fighting.
Yeah, no, 100%. I feel like we're going to be fighting, but it's at this, like, slower rate, which I don't think I could agree with, because I feel like the fight never stops, since there's always going to be something that's going to pop up and interfere with that. Because mm-hmm. here's the thing, society also controls based on the fact of if there's an argument coming down. Because if there's an argument coming down, they can, like, lure you in and be like, hey, we're a society, we're going to help you with our motives, and those motives are going to inherently help them, because...
Yeah.
Again, they want to control the population. They want to be the people in charge of what's controlling. And I see society as a broad term, because that is a bunch of things. That's the culture you see around you. That's the influencers that dictate society. That's the companies. That's the politicians. That's the elitists. And I think at the bottom of everything, it's the elitists that control everything. And I say this probably every podcast, just because I have such a strong feeling about how the fact history hasn't really changed and it's been in the hands of people who have had the mass power. But it's like, you see these political trends, you see these cultural shifts, but nothing's changed at the same time, because there's always going to be a person, Jeff Bezos, why not, Bill Gates,
mm-hmm.
at the top of you telling you what you should buy, what you should wear, how you should live your life, what you should do for work, all this factor.
Yeah.
And now social media is a huge factor, but guess who owns TikTok? Elitists. So mm-hmm. it's kind of like this cultural push that they want us to enter. And I feel like until people can coincidentally agree with that, there's mm-hmm. not going to be much progress in feminism. There's not going to be much progress in society, in life as a whole.
Yeah. And the thing is, while you say that, I think that TikTok more now than ever is encouraging different body types. And they're encouraging mm-hmm. women to step out of their comfort zones and, you know, get that job, you know, get that, you know, like, whatever makes you happy kind of thing. And so...
Yeah.
I think that... I mean, now society is picking up with us millennials and our, you know, Gen Z and the new generation, because we are shaping our future. And mm-hmm. so now that we have grown up with this mindset, we're going to take it into our future. And so, regardless of all of these big companies, I think at some point we're going to overthrow this, like, colonized mindset. And so we're just going to start doing what needs to happen, in which women have equal pay, in which, you know, minorities are getting justice for things that are happening around us. And, you know, like, it's just happening. Like, that's what's happening, and it's just society that's... becoming better.
You know, it's interesting that you say that too, because I feel like when people were gonna create these social media apps, they were gonna use them as a form of control, right?
Yeah.
And now that you say that, I kind of am realizing, like, hey, this kind of our outlet to find freedom within the world is like this escape.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, there is a lot of monetization that comes down on TikTok,
unfortunately,
and that's like part of the censorship. Like, yes, I agree, some things should be censored, such as the alt-right, that should definitely be censored.
Mm-hmm.
However, the downfall of censorship too is the fact that if people are going to be fighting for their rights, society's going to want to, like, censor that too, because mm-hmm. like, why would they want, like, revolutionaries to go against them?
Exactly. That's also true,
which is like a huge factor. But it's interesting that you say that social media is like kind of like our outlet for freedom and fighting, because I know our parents are like, oh, God damn it, social media. Like, I hate social media.
Yeah.
But they don't realize that that's our way of going outside sometimes. That's exactly. our way of reading a book. That's our way of gauging information. And having that kind of, like, cultural shift for them, they didn't really understand that. Because let's be real here, our parents don't really know how to use... I mean, at least... Mom does not know how to use social media. Like, she'll post some very zoomed in face pictures of me, and I'm like, that's not, no. That's gonna haunt me in like 12 years. Yeah. So, all this being said, this kind of makes her, Simone de Beauvoir, getting back to the topic, a postmodernist as she questions femininity, feminine morale, and all the ways women have been taught to act, which is crazy to think she did in the late 1940s. And this also rebuttals Aquinas, who was fond of calling women the imperfect man.
Interesting.
Again, remember, this is a Western, like, the starter of a Western philosophy, so their progressivism was not at all anything. So, I just think that's crazy, because I would still argue that people believe that now. That women are seen as this imperfect man.
As a, like, an inferior
species. Yeah, as an inferior person to the man. There's a song by Taylor Swift called The Man, so I'm just thinking of that in my whole entire head right now. But I just think it's, like, insane, personally, that Aquinas would say that, and then she's kind of rebuttaling the fact that, no, we're not the imperfect men. We are independent women, and we are a different sex.
We're just different.
Yeah, like, we're just different.
Even though we are built different, our capabilities, our physical capabilities are different, but our mental capacities can be the same when worked.
And arguably, you can bring this in too, women mature earlier than men.
Mm-hmm.
So here's like the thing, is just like, I don't know. I just, my biggest thing with the whole entire Aquinas calling the woman an imperfect man is the fact that that also plays into the fact that Simone de Beauvoir is right. Like, we've always been compared on the basis of men. We've always been compared onto like what the man has the capability to do, rather than being seen as a separate sex.
Exactly.
Which is very, like, crazy, because for so much of history, that's been what the status quo has been.
I mean, stereotypically, everyone says that, like, you know, we are unequal. And which, I guess it's fair to say that, but we're trying to, I don't want to say even the playing field, but with hard enough work, one can accomplish anything. And so when we see men as large football players, right, they are good running, they're good linebackers because they, you know, guard the ball. However, a woman can be faster and quicker, so she's a good running back.
Yeah.
And so a football team requires different body types and different capabilities per, you know, her position.
Yeah, no, 100%. And referring back to Aquinas, before I took down Aquinas' claim and was adamant about saying that women do have the capability to make decisions and it can't just be men. So, with all this, you would think that she would be a feminist, right? Wrong. She actually didn't want to call herself that until the 70s, and much of that was based on the fact that she didn't see this change ready to happen. So she acknowledged the fact that she was, like, way ahead of her time. It's also noted that women's liberation couldn't just occur because of a socialist state she had hoped for. That it would still include much boundaries, especially with the dynamic of her time. That's what she said. So, what makes a woman? In 2020, is it purely social norms? Are we raised to condition to believe that? Is it nature? I guess the answers are honestly limitless, especially now that we live in the society, but I guess that wraps up the end of the podcast on Simone de Beauvoir.
Yeah, and we are definitely going to come back to feminism, nature versus nurture, you know.
Want to do nature versus nurture, because I feel like that'd be super cool, because there's a philosophy aspect of it, and Hannah can definitely talk about psychology aspect.
I will pop off.
She'll pop off. She'll have the stats and everything that I don't have the capability to do, since I am not a psych major.
Yes, ma'am.
But I respect her for that, because that takes so much studying about, I always refer to, like, the different nitrates that make your chemicals in your brain. I think I'm talking about nitrogen bases.
Yeah.
That make up cells. No, DNA.
DNA is
nitrogen. Is DNA even in your brain? I don't.
DNA is everywhere.
Oh.
But it is.
Olga, I'm so sorry you're listening to this. She's probably like, wow, like, I'm a doctor, and you know what? My daughter is.
It's huge. It, like, the sciences and the arts and slash humanities are very different.
You know, it's funny because, like, I feel like I do have, like, a science-y brain aspect of mine. Like, I passed anthropology with an A. Proud of that one. But also my brain is just, like, I'm so devoted to, like, the liberal arts perspective of everything, like philosophy, political science, and singing and music making.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is why psychology is in the middle.
Exactly. It's a nice Yay. Little barrier. You got both everything.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, see you next time.
All right. See y'all Bye. Next time.